In Noho, please be seated. This environment court resumes.
Good morning. Ms. Malhot for the Regional Council, Mr. Page. Who are you for? I know you're for ORAC.
For ORAC.
Anybody else? Because you were going to get back to us about that at the start of Cromwell. I think it was unclear whether you had any other parties that you were picking up.
Well, I'm sorry, I haven't done that. I should have produced a schedule. But as we work through the course of the day, I will simply be calling the witnesses as they appear on your list and leading them through the process, Mark.
So there are witnesses for ORUG. Are you also acting in relation to them in a private capacity?
Well,
because many of them have, you know, obviously made submissions themselves or are part of their own right.
Well, that's right. I act in my ORUG capacity, and there are some who are self-represented in their personal capacity, Emma Crutchley is one of those, and she's been corresponding with the court. So, nevertheless, for the sake of making this process smooth today, I won't be distinguishing.
I would like you to. I actually want to know who do you represent. That was the purpose of the question.
Yes.
And if you could file a schedule, even if it's just an email to the registry, so that we know who you are representing.
Yep. Yes, okay. I can do that for the court.
And I would be very much assisted that if there are some individuals out there who are not part of the, you know, part of the ORUG team of witnesses, and you're still here, if you could assist with the swearing in, as has been done with other parts of the hearing as well.
Yes, I can do that.
Okay. So we had a fantastic site visit yesterday by a helicopter and also a flyover, desktop flyover. Now, obviously, we didn't take any recordings apart from the occasional photo from the helicopter. I think we saw everything that we were asked to see, slightly out of order because there was low cloud in the basin, but I think we saw everything. And we also had a desktop flyover, and that's looking mainly at the Kaiuri area. So that's actually been recorded, so we're not going to uplift it to the court web page, but if anyone wants to see it, it's actually been recorded. Just again, go through the registry and ask, and we can make that available. Now, two things coming out of that. One was a huge plan of the Marahera Kia catchment, which was shown to us before we jumped on the helicopter. That's just pointing out the main water bodies, main races. Certainly not complete, but thought, Mr. Page, that you might want to have that up on the wall. I mean, that's obviously not in evidence because it was just a guide, a general guide as to what we were going to see, where we were going to go. But if your witnesses may be assisted by that in terms of pointing out where they are.
Yes. Well, I was going to ask particularly the Manahatikia witnesses to locate the court from where they are from compared to your visit yesterday. So.
Okay. So we've got a mega plan. I don't know whether you want to look at it. As I said, it's not complete, but it does contain a fair amount of detail.
Yes. Well, that looks fairly familiar, so it's a question of where it's going, wherever we can put it that's going to be useful for the witnesses in the court.
All right, think about that. Are we able to attach it to the black screen? Very good. And then the only other thing was a plan which was produced by Paulette from Ngāi Tahu. Again, it's not in evidence because it's not evidence. And I'm not quite sure how to deal with that because no one's seen it apart from the court. And so I'll be obliged if perhaps Council can confer, should it come in as part of the common bundle. It's noting, for example, reserves recognised by the Māori Land Court, some noho under the treaty settlement, places of interest and place names of importance. So you think about that, it's not actually evidence, but it was part of the flyover as well, the desktop flyover. It will be recorded, I think, is recorded on the video that we've taken of it, but I'm not sure how to handle it because it strictly wasn't an evidential event.
Yes, so So is that the document, a document that the registry has?
Yeah, the registry will have it. I just don't have it to hand. I hope the registry has it, or I'll find it. Yep, we do. So we can circulate that over lunch, and perhaps if you could guide me in terms of what to do, whether to receive it, not to receive it. But, yeah, but I thought that that plan would be helpful, especially to you, Mr. Page.
Yep. Yes.
Okay. Now, what else? We've suggested that we will take a site visit on Thursday morning to Carrick. How are we going with the arrangements? Because we can't nail it. We're not doing it because the registry and the ministry need time to review that in terms of their own health and safety policy.
Thank you, Your Honour. I've had a chat to Mr. Parcell.
Oh, great.
And we're just finishing some of the details, but it seems like it will be covered in two ways.
Yep.
One by a photo montage that Mr. Parcell will do as part of his representation tomorrow morning.
Mm-hmm.
And prior to that, travelling out to Bannockburn, we've got roughly about an hour and a half.
Yeah.
A couple of vantage points.
Yeah.
That we're just discussing details over, so...
Okay, so we're thinking of Thursday, so we'll do it after Mr. Purcell's evidence.
Prior?
No, post. Yeah, we're thinking post. Because the purpose of the site visit, hugely important, but it is there for the court to contextualise evidence, not to gather it. You know, the evidence is that which is actually presented in court. So we're just, as always, trying to minimise the risk of that happening, having people with us who are not actually witnesses, who have no vested interest in, you know, in the hearing one way or t'other. So that's why we said Thursday morning, and also we need time to review what's being proposed, or the ministry needs time to review what's being proposed. Yep. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. So can you get back to me by close of business today? That would be good.
Yes.
All right. Anything else that I need to know about?
Other than, Your Honour, obviously the joint witness statement from expert conferencing was filed on Friday, and we do have a memorandum circulating amongst parties at the moment in terms of arrangements for the week of the 24th and
very
how
good.
That is to be presented.
Okay, thank you very much. Anything from you? No? Okay, so we're in your hands, Mr. Page.
Thank you. The program for the day indicates that I was going to say something to start with. I hadn't anticipated doing that.
Oh, no, you don't have to, unless you want to. But
Well, I can't think of anything useful to tell the court at the moment, so I don't want to occupy your time.
No, no, that's all good.
So I think the simplest thing then is to begin with the witnesses. Now, a number of them have prepared a written summary of the points that they have made, and also some commentary on matters that have arisen during the course of the hearing that they want to address the court on.
Mm-hmm.
Some simply want me to ask them some questions about that.
Yep.
And others have got a written summary to read. And
okay.
So we'll just deal with that as we proceed, if you're comfortable with that.
Yep.
So then the first witness this morning is Anna Gillespie. So if I can call Anna. Is your full name Anna Michelle Gillespie?
It is.
And did you prepare a brief of evidence dated the 3rd of February 2021?
I did.
And you confirmed that it's true and correct to the best of your knowledge and belief?
It is.
Thank you. Now, before I ask you questions about your place, what I'm going to do is, did you prepare a written summary that you wish to read to the court?
I did.
Madam Registrar, I wonder if I can... I'll hand a copy to my friend. Now, Now, before I ask you to read your summary statement, behind you to your right on the wall, there is a plan of the Manahatakia catchment. Could you please approach that and point to whereabouts your place is for the court?
Yeah. What's the place name? Just far below your finger.
It's Omakau.
Omakau. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we're just about 8K above Omakau, so it's Thompson's Creek coming down.
Fine.
Do you want the witness to repeat that so that it can be recorded, Mum?
Yes, if you could. Yeah, so we can pick you up on the mic.
You'd appreciate that all of the evidence is being recorded off-site and then transcribed, so when we're not looking at the microphone, the poor people who's typing this up can't hear it. So if you could describe then in words what you've just pointed out on the map about where your property is.
So we're 8K above Omakau, almost due north, and sitting between the Thompson's catchment and the Lawler catchment.
Yes. And so can you just describe, I know that you've dealt with it and you've written evidence back in February, just a general outline of your property and your farming type and what you do.
So we've got 394 hectares of land there. We're running a dairy finishing and beef finishing unit, so we're 100% cattle, and we've got 224 hectares of spray irrigation.
Thank you. And I understand that in 2020 you received an environmental award. Can you explain what that was about?
In 2020 we were the Balanced Farm Environment Awards Otago Supreme winners, along with the Soil Management Award from Balance and the Waterwise Award from Waterforce. Thank you.
Yeah. Can you describe your role with the Manahatakia Catchment Group?
I'm the chair of the Manahatakia Catchment Group, which was formed in 2019, I think.
Thank you. And was that the group that was formed to advance the reconsenting project?
Yes, to advance the reconsenting progress and to be a cohesive voice for the minimum flow process.
Thank you. Ms Gillespie, can you simply read to the court your written summary that you've just circulated?
Kia ora katoa, ko Anna Gillespie aho. I'm the current chair of the Manahatakia Catchment Group, but today I speak on behalf of our business, Two Farmers Farming Limited. My husband Ben and I farm out of Omakau with our tamariki Will and Millie. My concerns with PC7 and the short-term rollover proposal are vast. However, I will focus on the main themes of my evidence. Over the past 9.5 years that we have been farming at Omakau, we have made significant progress on developing highly productive, environmentally and financially sustainable business. We are proud of what we have achieved with our whānau and within our community. He kaikahe wakatupu he te maiti. A village raises a child. For this to hold true, our village needs to be thriving. And so do all of those that are part of that village. Small rural communities such as ours are increasingly needing to be resilient against both external influences such as pandemics, but also increasingly influences closer to home in the form of regulations from short-sighted regional councils. I've spent hundreds of hours engaged in the deemed permit renewal process for our community and the minimum flow setting process. And now we are here talking of short-term, low-cost rollovers. There is nothing low-cost about this process, and short-term holds a higher cost than many of us can imagine. On our farm, we've fenced off riparians, reduced modelled nutrient losses to very minimal levels, increased biodiversity, planted a large number of shelter trees, and started planting our own homegrown natives. We have always been open to sharing this journey with our community. We've held numerous field days, hosted many groups, both national and international, and for us a real high point, having our Omakau school on farm for a day culminating in planting out a newly fenced man-made wetland. With the community really starting to engage in the conversation around water and the environment, do we really want them to just stop and wait 6 years for IAC to maybe have their plan ready? No, we do not. I want our community to keep engaging and learning and growing now. In 2020, we won the Balanced Farm Environment Awards, Otago Supreme Award, and in April this year held a field day with approximately 100 people on farm. This was a day in which we could share our farm with the greater community. The day after this field day, we held a propagation workshop attended by 13 people, mostly local farmers, learning how to grow their own natives from seedlings and cuttings. To us, this was probably the most rewarding. Seeing passion ignited in others is truly inspiring. We obviously have a strong environmental ethos and a real passion for kaitiakitanga and teaching our tamariki how to be the next generation of guardians. This environmental focus has been allowed and supported by the farm business being a productive and profitable unit due to irrigation. When we took over the farm in 2011, it had 80 hectares of spray and a large area of wild flood. Production was limited by species, nutrients and water availability to plants, growing an estimated 12 tonne of dry matter per year under spray irrigation. Move on 9 years and we have 230 hectares of spray and 15 hectares of wild flood. The irrigated land is growing 17 tonne of dry matter of pasture, fodder beet crops yielding 25 tonne and dryland pasture growing 7 tonne. Our irrigation water is sourced from Omaka Irrigation Company's main race and the Lauder Creek Scheme. We are members of the Lauder Water Users Group and engaged in flow sharing agreement the group has proposed as part of the group's joint deemed permit renewal application. The irrigation development we undertook was put in with confidence that in 2021 deemed permits would be replaced with RMA permits. And given we can utilise our water efficiently, we would be successful in securing our existing water. We have always tried to be ahead of regulations. We use our water efficiently and we undertake a high level of measuring and monitoring on the farm. From our harvest weather station, we have a daily view of air temperature, rainfall, soil moisture, soil temperature and pump flows. We measure pasture weekly to monthly depending on time of year and we annually soil test 25% of the paddocks, amongst many other biological elements measured. All production decisions made on farm are well informed with this level of technology and information available. Water use decisions alone are based on soil type, soil moisture content, crop or pasture species and growth stage, weather predictions and stage of season. No decision is made lightly. It is a complex biological system. Our aim is to optimise production by maximising the amount of feed grown and consumed in situ, while not moving outside the bounds of good environmental management. We've developed a farm system which best fits the farm's capability to grow feed, matching our feed demand to the feed supply as closely as practicable. There are many gains yet to be made with irrigation technology, e.g. further soil moisture meters will enable us to be more accurate with irrigation scheduling under the gun irrigation and the bottom pivot. Replacing the top pivot via iron and installing on the bottom pivot will increase efficiency of use. The proposed short-term six-year rollover of PC7 is going to have severe effects on our business. No longer will we have the water security we were led to believe we were working towards. A six-year term will mean any further investment in technology to improve our water use efficiency will not happen. We cannot afford to spend any more money on systems that we do not have secure water for. All profits will be driven into debt repayment as the risk of losing water allocation in 6 years' time increases. With water security comes income security, and with that comes our ability to keep investing in the environment. However, my biggest concern is that we will have to stop any further environmental projects. We are just building momentum in terms of our progress on farm and involving the wider community and igniting their passion for enhancing the environment. I find it hard to believe some parties are willing to let the environment sit for 6 years. We are not. Thank you.
Good morning, Ms. Gillespie. I just have a couple of questions just around the irrigation development that you've undertaken on your property and also about the irrigation area on your property. So you've referred to undertaking irrigation development and making some fairly significant capital investment. I'm just interested in the timing around that for you and when the infrastructure was established and put in place on your property.
So 2013-14, the first pivot went in. I'm sorry, I'm looking at Ben Gung. Am I getting the nod? 2014-15, the second pivot went in, and the guns were moved from irrigating light soil, which wasn't that efficient, to a heavier soil. So they were moved outside of the pivot area.
So in terms of the investment that you've made in that infrastructure, that investment was before March last year?
Yes.
And in terms of the area that you are irrigating on your property, would you be able to highlight on a map the area that is irrigated or presently under irrigation?
Yes, although that changes every year.
It does, and I appreciate that. And in terms of that change, if we are looking at the time period from, it is 1 September 2017 to 18 March 2020, over that time, would you be able to highlight on a map the maximum area of
that
was irrigated?
Yep.
Great. That's all the questions I have.
Thank you. Be examination?
No.
Commissioner? Just see if the court's got questions for you as well.
Yep.
So the work that you've been doing as the chair of the Manurakea catchment group, so you've explained in your evidence that you've got an application that's gone on, but do you have at the moment any voluntary arrangements as part of the catchment group or as part of your involvement in the one of these irrigation schemes? I'm sorry, I've just overlooked that. Could you just remind me which one that is?
The Lauder scheme.
The Lauder scheme, yes.
So in terms of water sharing agreement, is that
yes,
what you're asking?
Yes. Do you have any interim arrangements in terms of water sharing that's going on?
So the Lauder scheme last year trialled a water sharing agreement. And that's sitting on hold while we await this process at this point.
Right. So when you say you trialled it, what does that mean?
We trialled having a residual flow at the bottom of the creek, so sharing more water. So irrigators were still getting essentially the same amount, but we were holding a residual at the bottom of the creek rather than letting it run lower to what it had been.
Right. So was that Thompson's Creek?
Lauder Creek.
Oh, the Lauder Creek, sorry. So it's the Lauder scheme that you were referring to earlier. So when you say you had a trial, how long did that run for? Was just that over the peak irrigation season or just something
Roger.
Indicative?
Did we do a week? Yeah. So for the court, we trialled it for a week and then we had a significant rainfall. So in a low flow period, we trialled for a week holding that flow up. So farmers were taking less water to hold the flow up and then we did get significant rain. So that was the end of that.
Right. So you hadn't necessarily been anticipating that when you set your trial up.
No.
So I guess that there was a benefit in one sense, and in the other sense, you didn't get to run the trial on a little bit.
Yep.
So you couldn't take anything out of the trial for the week, in other words, is that
we
right?
did see some results, but I'll leave that for other people to comment on.
Okay.
Who do you think is best placed to be commenting on that? Who's coming up as a witness?
Is Roger coming up? No. Kelly? Can you answer that or not?
Okay.
Yep.
Kelly?
Yeah,
the
next
one. Okay. Well, look, thanks for that.
Right. You all know
that we don't know your property very well, or probably you'll think we don't know much about what's actually happening out in the catchment other than what we've been able to pick up from the evidence and what we can obviously see when we're on our site visits. So forgive me if my questions come well behind the eight ball as far as you're concerned in terms of knowledge, but I am here to understand and make the best decision that we can in circumstances which are really, really trying, not only for the primary sector, but for many other people within Otago around water management. And part of that process is obviously being engagement of the court's full resources on expert conferencing, and that looks to be providing results which all sides are happier with, but I won't say happy, but it's moving in the right direction, and that's not finished, and obviously the conversation about priorities has barely begun, but it will continue. I'm interested in where do we go, or where does the Lauder community go from here if the plan change is confirmed? If it's confirmed with short-term consents, because obviously your witness, Ms. Dicey, is still pursuing a long-term consent option, which has to be evaluated by the court. And so I'm interested in relationships and what happens next, if you like, over the next 6 years. And you said, and I understand that, that it's unlikely that there'll be continuing investment in irrigation infrastructure with a view to improving efficiency because the security supply is uncertain going forward. And that's your evidence, is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. And why, or do you think that there is a different outcome if you had a long-term consent, given the prospect of a new land and water management plan, this now being prepared under the new NPS for freshwater management, the National Environmental Standards, and also with a view to climate change. So why is there more certainty under that process than under a six-year consent? Can you help me out there?
One of our concerns with a six-year consent is that, given ORC haven't met any deadlines in the last several years, that there is going to be no land and water plan. It's not going to be notified by 2023.
Mm-hmm.
Are we not going to be hitting 2025 with a new land and water plan to turn over these consents 2026?
Mm.
So then where does that leave us in terms of what do we do?
So your concern is, do we do this again for another 6 years?
Yes.
Okay, so that's one. So no confidence, low confidence in the capacity and competence of the Regional Council to produce a new land and water plan, which will give you certainty as much as you can have it under any plan going forward, at least for another 10-year period. You don't think that will be notified or let alone made operative within the time frame that the region's indicated. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so one specific issue coming out of that is that you'll be in the same position and you'll be rolling over consents again with all the attendant costs of rolling over consents again for another short-term period whilst waiting for this thing, the new land and water plan to come. Is that fair?
Yes.
Yeah. What other concerns have you got?
That even under a 10-year consent, it becomes marginally bankable as to whether you would spend money on infrastructure for any irrigation. So in our situation, it's gaining those last pieces of efficiency, which can make quite a difference in a water-short area. So under the top pivot, for example, on the initial build on that was 145 hectares. Immediately 7 hectares were shut off with the VRI system that don't get irrigated.
Now tell me about that. What's the...
So the variable rate irrigation, so every nozzle turns on and off on a GPS sensor, so when it's walking over a lane, it's not watering. So that water can be used
somewhere else.
So the more efficiencies you gain like that, particularly when we're so water short, are money in the bank, really. Like in terms of the amount of grass you can then grow on those other pieces of land is, I mean, when you see this place in a drought, that's not a pretty sight. So those patches of green under pivots are what is keeping the whole catchment going and the community. It's like the river is the lifeblood of this community. So
I understand. I understand the efficiencies and that if you save water, it can be used elsewhere. Or maybe be able to use it elsewhere, and that every drop actually counts in terms of where it is used, how it is used on the farm. What's the link up, though, with a short-term duration consent? Can you just talk to me about that?
So in terms of the in terms of putting any additional infrastructure in on a short-term consent, we can't afford. So the VR on the top pivot needs replaced. It's $90,000. So on a short-term, on a six-year consent, paying that back becomes a marginal call as to whether you do or whether you wait for 6 years and see what happens with the next rollover. Because if we lose water in the next rollover, if we lose allocation, which is, I know that's changed in the schedule now, but that's what ORC tried to put in. So if that happens again and we do lose water, then we will have invested for nothing. And how do we pay that back?
And that's a really good question. It's probably what everybody in the room is actually faced with, the question of how to, you know, to repay debt and then over what period and the interest that your bankers or other investors will have in that. So thinking about that, the schedule is one thing. And the schedule, as far as I can tell, but, you know, we've yet to have final cross-examination on it, is moving in the right-ish direction. It is an improvement over that which was notified. Would that be fair?
Yes.
Okay. So, and as I've understood the Regional Council's case to be that it doesn't want to be taking water off farmers, it wants to be maintaining at least the allocation. That wasn't being achieved through the schedule, but is now moving in the right direction. When the land and water plan comes in, now bringing into play a large number of considerations, what is there a risk that you might lose allocation via that route? Not because of any poorly drafted piece of machinery in the plan, like the schedule, but as a matter of policy, there is a need to decrease water. How then do you take? I mean, and I don't know because that's not been written, so it's for the future. And I don't know because if there are minimum flows and residual flows introduced via that plan, it may be introduced over decades rather than over in a single, you know, leap in order to bring the primary sector in line with it. So the reach and the timing of the reach, I don't know. That's a matter for discussion in the future. My question for you, though, is with that uncertainty, so not uncertainty about this plan, but now I'm talking about the future plan. Why invest? Should you be investing? And if you should be investing, why investing? And what am I missing here?
If we don't invest and we don't use what water we have efficiently, then there's a completely different business model running on... would venture to say the majority of, well, all of the irrigated farms in the catchment. It's, if the water ends up being reduced, then we're going to have to obviously reduce irrigation area, which means a completely different fit for the farm.
Yeah, and you're talking amongst other things, the irrigation infrastructure on farm is a different fit.
Yeah.
Yeah, which presumably needs lead time to configure. And presumably must take into account the investment made and the time required to pay down that debt before changes are made.
Yeah.
So we're talking about a timing and sequencing issue in the future. Would that be fair?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the anxiety is that you're not going to be given, if there has to be change, and again, I don't know because that's the thing for the future, is the anxiety that you will not be given time to either pay down that debt or to adapt farming systems to a new plan coming in.
Probably the bigger concern is that there will potentially be time, but the reduced output from the farm, from our farm, the reduced output won't sustain probably both of us working on the farm. So draw a straw, who's going off farm? It's like, yeah, we've got the skill set to go off farm, but do we want to? It's our passion, it's what we do. So it's, and the reduced income from for the community, it's, the community at the present has been thriving. It's it's a risk and a whole lot of unknowns that we don't know.
And I think, and I get that because I can see that everywhere, that there's a whole lot of unknowns and sort of known unknowns, if you like, that amounts to a great deal of uncertainty and amounts to a great deal of risk. How then do you, in this time frame now, prepare for that, if at all?
So in the next 6 years before the Land and Water Plan comes?
How do you get ready, or how do you, how do you get ready, how do you influence or get ready for that? Because the known unknowns, what do you,
So in terms of working with the council, do you mean on that front as well?
Or on all
specifically
fronts.
on farm.
Yeah.
So in terms of engagement, obviously our permit applications are sitting there waiting at present. A lot of that science work will potentially have to be revisited I guess to give evidence against a land and water plan, only guessing at what it might come out with. The minimum flow process, we have an inkling of where that's looking to push, and we know it's going to be higher than the existing, but how much higher is the risk? And that's a whole community risk. In terms of on-farm, we have an on-farm strategy of irrigation. So in terms of in a dry season, I think it was 17, 18, we had a really dry season, and so for our farm, the guns shut down. So there's 50 hectares immediately that can shut down, so we don't water it at all, it just shuts off. And that's all progressively being planted into more deep-rooting species so that they'll hold on longer. It's on a deeper soil, so if we end up with a 6 week dry, 8 week dry, they'll still be there. If it turns into months, they'll still be there. They'll survive it rather than a ryegrass based system under the other pivots. So some of those strategies, having our dry land well and truly developed so that when it does rain, it does grow, doesn't just sit there and wait for a while. It's to building the resilience within the farm system.
What about resilience within the community?
There's a struggle. Very new rural community.
You're at the heart of it, though, being the chair of the Manahatikia irrigation.
I guess that's why we've worked so hard on our deemed permit renewal process and having that all as one package for the whole catchment so that we would come up with a resilient package that works for the catchment and that works for the environment in the catchment, not just the irrigators. It works for the river. It works for all the species in the river. And so that's why we've worked so hard on that, so that we can sustain that community. So I guess it's going to come down to, at some point, the argument about minimum flow as to what that community can sustain.
Mm. So do you do nothing over the next 6 years, or do you continue to sustain those relationships in that community?
We have to continue to sustain and engage and work to try and get that land and water plan on the right track, rather than who knows what.
Going to pick your brains over some technical details. Falls dam, we flew it, and beyond. What's the minimum flow at Falls Dam? I think it could be a residual rather than a minimum. Do you know?
No, I don't want to say, because I'm using 500 here. Yeah.
Something in 500 litres per second. Okay. Who's the best person that we've yet to hear from who's good with those? Look at Mr. Page. He's not giving evidence.
Roger Williams, I think you flew with him yesterday.
Who's your best witness on things like any residual flow at Omakau, any voluntary arrangements?
Mrs. Heckler will know a good deal about that.
Okay.
I know that you travelled with Mr. Williams yesterday, who was the manager of the entire scheme.
I didn't. I flew with somebody from ORC, Pete. I've forgotten Pete's last name, sorry. Yeah.
So if you have questions about how the Falls Dam's actually operating,
I want to know. I want to have a better idea as to the flows in the Manahiri Kia. Globally,
yes.
That which commences, if you like, with Falls.
Yes.
With Falls Dam. Mm.
Well, the witness who is most across all of that is Mr. Hickey, but he's not here this week.
I can recall him.
You can.
Yeah.
the witness, the person in the room today who knows all about that stuff and has worked with Mr. Hickey on that is Mr. Williams. He's not given evidence, but he can be called and sworn if the court wishes to.
I think what we might do is think about our questions and then put them as a series of questions to Mr. Hickey, and just recall him. We need to have a better idea as to the flow regime, because there is one.
Yes.
It's probably a manufactured one, if I could put it that way, that is by both consents and voluntary actions and the interface of the races, but we want to have a better idea of that.
Yes. Mm. Well, he's across that.
Mm.
While I'm on my feet, I've realised that I've made an error.
Yeah.
You'll probably wonder why you've got images in front of you.
I don't.
Ah.
Yeah.
No, I don't. Sorry. Now I do. No, yes. But I didn't.
Mrs. Gillespie has prepared a series of photographs explaining her farming operation, and I neglected to take her through
those. That's okay. We can do that. Yes. Yeah. We'll just finish the court's questions.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So the relationships continue, even in the interim. Is your evidence to prepare the community to get ahead of, I think it was your evidence, of the land and water plan, which is to come?
So we will keep preparing.
Mm.
But until we start seeing sections of it, potentially, then it's a waiting game. But surely there must be some of it coming out soon.
Okay.
If they're going to have it done by 2023, then we're midway 2021.
How difficult was it, and again this could be a question for the witness, next witness, how difficult was it getting together on the Lauder Creek a water user group, even if it was just for that 1 week? How difficult was that, or how long did that take?
Was actually reasonably successful in terms of the buy-in with that group right from the word go. So 2017 we started that group, and the buy-in has always been really good from all the deemed permit holders, and the scheme. And so in terms of the sharing agreement, it took some discussion, but again, Mr. Hickey had solid evidence and solid facts as to why we should do what we did. So,
okay. Who holds the... So you've mentioned a scheme and you've mentioned deemed permit holders.
Yep.
So in terms of the water user group, some are taking off a scheme and some are taking... some are just taking directly from the creek. Would
That's
that
correct.
Be fair? Okay.
Yep.
And some are doing both and some might also access other schemes and other races.
Yep, that's correct.
Okay. Those deemed permit holders, are you one of them?
No.
Okay. And so the buy-in was good because the principle, I take it, was well understood.
Yep.
The getting there in terms of who reduces when you reduce, was that the detail that you had to go through Mr. Hickey about?
Yep.
Yeah,
that's correct.
Okay. Okay. And that informal, or was it recorded, or
That was a minuted meeting, but it was
Okay. Right, those are my questions.
I just had one question, really, and that's the use to which you put your farm, which I think you said is primarily cattle finishing. Is that
that's correct?
How you describe it? How do you plan for that market? Does that market go up and down? And have you invested in a system that only provides for that type of use, or could you, use alternative? Irrigation for other purposes. Can you just talk a little bit about that and how you build that into your business modelling?
So about 70% of our income comes from dairy grazing. So dairy grazing in terms of young stock grazing, so calves come on in December each year and stay for 20-odd months until they go home to calve. So they're there through two winters. So that's a large percentage of the stock numbers on at present. But in the spring, when the bulk of our feed is grown, we purchase in larger steers and finish those to a prime market. So that market has a lot of variation in it, but because we're working within such a short window, the price variation is you're buying and selling on the same market. In terms of dairy grazing market, the price is fairly consistent, so there's our stable income comes from the dairy grazing side of the business.
And is that consistent over many years? Is there any potential for it to
It's only ever increased for us.
Okay.
It hasn't decreased. And so we don't hold it. We don't go up and down with peaks and flows. We have the same dairy farmers that we've grazed for the last, one of them 7 years, the other one's 4 or 5, I think. I can't remember. So they're long-term arrangements. And the prices set, we don't fluctuate every year.
So that's a reasonably constant in your business.
Yes.
Plan, whatever it is. Yes. Okay. Thank you. That's answered my question. Thank you, Laura.
All right.
Might have some more questions after we've had the photos.
Yep. Okay. So we may have some more questions after the photos. But have you got anything as a consequence of what the court's asked?
No, I haven't. I was just going to leave.
Just take us through the photos.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you.
If you could...
let's get back to the start.
Oh, right. So if you could just talk through what the court is seeing in each of the photographs, because we need a word picture to describe what's in the evidence.
So this is a pond that was fenced off, previous slide, 2012, and the kids were planting some poplars and some pines along the boundary of that that pond. We have got some flax and some tui tui around there as well, so a bit of native, but those initial years, the shelter planting was more of a priority, and a stock exclusion, obviously. the kids having fun. The kids are completely 100% involved. This is their gully that they're planting in, so we only ever work in that gully when the kids are at home. And yeah, planting natives that were grown in the garden at home. Next plant is a... Sorry, can we go back a slide? Thanks, Damien. A wetland area that we developed, so it was a bit of a boggy patch in the bottom of a gully, fenced off and dammed up in 2018, and native carrots growing in the middle of that, which are particularly good for pukekos to nest in, and our predators can't get into the middle of them. Native plants in the veggie garden at home, so we're now growing, there's about 700 natives in pots in the garden at present, and Ben has just built shade house and area to be growing on those plants to be planted out. Paul Burns School visiting the wetland that we saw just before, hugely important having community in visiting those wetlands. So this is an upland bully, and we had Doc do a survey on farm two summers ago to looking for galaxids really, but found a really healthy, good population of upland bullies, which are another native small species. Some more native plants growing in the garden and out on farm with protectors around them. And Omakau School planting a gully that we've just developed. So the wetlands are man-made. The wee pond area there that you can see is a wee dam that we've built to hold up the water and will act as sediment traps if there is ever an issue. Again, hugely important having those kids out on farm experiencing A, the farm, and B, the planting and understanding of the water system and discussions around the whole flows through our whole environment. The kids have been picking up plants at home, so a lot of the plants now have been grown from seed, and so they grow in little seedlings and trays and then repotted out. Just some healthy cattle looking great. technology use. Te Pari Crush is a pretty expensive bit of kit sitting there. And again, any technology use on farm, while expensive, is saves time and a bit of stress, to be fair. Centre pivot on the top end. And again, centre pivot over crops. And us. Again, some healthy cattle being photogenic. So Riparian fencing, we have worked on all of our, it's not a very wide waterway. You can see none of our waterways are a metre wide like the new regulations. But we fence a metre typically or a bit more on one side so that we can reach over for clean culverts with a digger, and the other side we've left 3+ metres so we can plant down them, typically on the side that'll shade the waterway so that that'll reduce any weed burden in the waterway. Centre pivot again. And cattle on dryland crop, so hugely important to keep the dryland producing as well as what we possibly can as well as irrigated. A recent field day on farm. And another dryland area actually that's been fenced out and started planting carrots around that this year. Winter.
Is that a wall frost?
Yeah. Just break feeding cattle. Yep. Cheers.
That's all from
me. Thank you.
Any questions for me?
I'll just say the one question. In terms of the
dryland crop, how much of your farm is in dryland crop?
There was 20 hectares this year through a development phase, but typically would be 10 to 15 maybe. Depending on the size, it'll depend on the size of the paddock that's due for renewal.
Right. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Thank you very much for your evidence.
Cheers.
Right. Call now Kelly Heckler.
Non-religious. Yes.
Is your full name Kelly Heckler?
Yes.
And are you giving evidence on behalf of DRN SA Hill, Louder Water Users Group, Louder Creek Limited and ORUG?
Yes.
And did you prepare a brief of evidence dated the 5th of February 2021?
Yes.
And do you confirm that it's true and correct to the best of your knowledge and belief?
Yes.
Now, on the wall behind you, you will see that there is a plan of Manaharikia. Can you indicate where your property is?
So, our property, this is our property up here. That's Lauder Creek Limited, our farm. It's got the headwaters of Lauder Creek, actually begins in our farm. Further down towards Omakau is in East Arthur, they farm in between the Thompsons and the Lauder Creek. The Lauder catchment pretty much covers this whole area through here, the Lauder Creek and its tributaries. That's it.
Thank you. Sorry to get you to do it again, but when you're close to the microphone, if you could repeat that description so that it's in the court's record.
Okay, Lauder Creek, the farm, starts on the Dunstan Mountains and runs down towards Lauder. The headwaters of Lauder Creek initiate there. The Lauder catchment covers the whole Lauder Creek and its tributaries. And DR and SR Hill farm down closer to Omakau in between the Thompson's Creek and the Lauder Creek.
It might help the court to formulate questions for you later, but can you explain the water sources that your farm has available?
Okay, our farm has a DEAM permit. In fact, it has two DEAM permits. We also have water from the Omakau Irrigation Company Lauder Race, which comes out of the Lauder Creek. So all of that water is coming out of the Lauder Creek and its tributaries.
Did you say Omakau as well?
Omakau Area Irrigation Company have a number of races that come out of creeks and tributaries, and the Lauder Race is the one that comes out of the Lauder Creek.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. So you're not taking Manaharikia River main stem water from your race?
No.
No. I just have a couple of supplementary questions for you. Could you explain for the court, from your farming perspective, what the impacts of a six-year consent rollover would be?
So from our farming perspective, and also in terms of our catchment, a six-year rollover has many unknowns for us. So due to these unknowns, we can't effectively plan because we don't really know so much what we're planning for. We recognise the need to develop our irrigation infrastructure and move forward, but we can't do that under a six-year permit because lending is significantly hampered. No bank really wants to give us money for capital investment when we can't pay it back in that six-year time frame. They don't know what's going to happen after that period, and neither do we. So we could pay for it from out of income, but we would not have enough funds to actually pay for it in that time. So we would limit our business significantly. We're also relatively early in our farming journey, I suppose you would say, and we just feel that the six-year rollover will put us in a holding pattern, and we will not be where we are planning to be in 6 years' time, whether that be reducing debt or other investments. We will actually still be at the same point in time. Potentially, this could also roll over almost into the next generation due to some of the decisions that we're making because of this. And I just don't really, I don't want to be in a position where my children will feel the impact of this, just because we haven't really got ourselves sorted out.
You say that you're early in your farm development. Can you explain a little bit about your current irrigation development and what your ultimate end game might be?
Well, at the end of the day, we want sustainable use of our. We want to use our irrigation water sustainably, and we have to invest in infrastructure to actually do it. We've got a lot of contour and very limited spray on our farm, so we need to replace that contour irrigation and border dike irrigation with more spray irrigation, and that will take a significant amount of money. So our end game would be to have all our irrigation water via spray. Yes.
And so on your farm, what sort of infrastructure would you need to invest in to achieve that?
We would need significant investment in dams, piping, the hardware, to the irrigation hardware, and software potentially for VRI. It would have a huge amount of piping. We have a significant number of trees, and the Central Otago climate does not lend to growing trees that well, so we're reluctant to take out vast number of trees because that will change the whole dynamic of our farm and also alter our biodiversity levels as well. And we have very strong winds. We could be creating wind erosion. All of those doors or all of those problems could become an issue for us if we change our farm too much to make way for significant infrastructure. So we've got to make our infrastructure fit our farm, and that may cost a little bit more, but that is the only way that we're going to achieve sustainable use of our water.
And did the proposal lodged by Manahiriki Catchment Group achieve the situation that you need for long-term investment if it were granted?
Yeah, well, Catchment Group and also like our Lauder Catchment Group proposal, we've made significant sacrifices on that proposal, reducing our water allocation effectively by a third to allow that to go back into the environment. And we felt that this is what needed to be done to actually go ahead and make our actual water, irrigation water use consent viable for everyone, including the environment.
I want to come now to perhaps a more technical matter, which is the date range for which water take records might be available for use for assessing your historical use. At the present time, I think the proposal is for the date range to be limited to 2020. Is that a problem for you?
Well, it's somewhat, I suppose, unnecessary. In our catchment, we are significantly limited by the climate. So the amount of water that we're taking is the amount of water that's actually there, minus leaving what we're going to leave for the environment. There is no more water. If we extend the date range, our water use data is not going to alter that much because there is no more water to use. unless that water was going, people can't irrigate. People are not going to use the water in the winter because people don't irrigate in the winter because it's too cold and the soils are already saturated. So it wouldn't be used there, so you couldn't get additional use there. And other than that, it would be, it would obviously only other place it could go would be to storage, and people would have to build storage to actually use it. The water use, it wouldn't... Having a date range on that doesn't make any real difference because in our catchment, the amount of water that's there is only the amount of water that's there available for use.
Okay. What provision are you referring to? So I can, I've got that in front of me whilst listening to the answer.
Controlled activity, I'm looking at Appendix 1 to the joint witness statement, which was filed on Friday.
Mm. Controlled activity.
In the controlled activity, Rule 10A.3.1.1, Romans 4,
mm.
The rate of take shall be no more than the rate of take recorded during the water years for which metadata is available up to June 2020.
Yep. And I'm not sure this witness answered the question that you put to her in the way that you meant it.
Yeah, well, I was going to put the issue on its head, and I can do that because the issue that I'm...
Where are you going, in other words?
Well, should I ask the witness the question in a different way so it might be clearer for where we're going?
Mm.
If the date range for historical water use records of June 2020 were removed, do you think there is a risk that water users might increase their water use after 2020, in other words, after now, to effectively stack their data to assist them on a renewal?
On our farm, no. In our catchment, no. Because there is no more water to use from the creek.
Is that because you're taking all of it?
A fair majority of it is taken, yes. Mm. Yep. And also some of it goes, there's an underground aquifer underneath the Lauder Creek, and a fair majority of it goes under there, yes. Mm-hmm.
And so the takes in that, from that water body and connected groundwater, drawing down from surface flows and groundwater flows, and a drawing... at least in terms of, I don't know anything about this groundwater aquifers, but I know about groundwater aquifers.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, I actually know a great deal about that, but I don't know anything about Lauder. Anyway, surface water body, the existing takes are taking all available flows that can be, diverted into a take point, gallery bore, whatever it is.
That'd be right.
So consequently, there's... limited opportunity, in your view, to ramp up.
Yeah.
I guess what ordinarily might be your rate of take.
Yeah. You'd obviously probably have to be taking it from someone else, and I don't think that would bode well.
That's why I'm really interested in relationships.
Water is. Yeah, the number one
asset
thing that people, and people respect that, and they respect everyone's allocation.
Your we've been talking about Lauder Creek.
Mm-hmm.
Is there an intermittent reach of Lauder Creek near your property? Can you explain where that is relative to your takes?
Yeah, so that is below our take. So in terms of Lauder Creek, we've got a take. One of the first irrigation takes is one of our takes, and then we've got Omakau Irrigation Company Lauder Race after that, and then we've got another farmer below Omakau Irrigation Company, and then we've got our other take, which the priority for those four takes is Omakau Irrigation Company take 15 heads, and so that's split into two priorities. So there's a 10 and a 5. So that 10's number one, Moran and Brown, which are the other people on our below the Omakau area irrigation company, are number two, and then we're number three and four. And so that's how it works. So when it cuts back, those priorities come into play. Yeah.
Do those priorities still get observed today?
Yes, they do. Yeah. Yep. They do get observed today. Our catchment, Lauder catchment, like to carry on what Anna was saying. We're looking at flow sharing. And the priority system, obviously, as you know, is a first in, first serve. Not really overly fair. And we want to replace that with our flow sharing that actually caters for the environment and the ecosystems that are in that creek, and also is fair to everyone else. And yes, we do need to use some historical data to get that to a point where it can be fair, and that obviously takes into account the priorities, but we also want to recognise the opportunities that the creek can give us in terms of not just limiting yourself to history, but also what's actually present and what's available and how we're going to manage it going forward.
Was flow sharing arrangement part of the reconsenting proposal?
Yep. Yeah. So we have gone through that process and we have put numerous proposals on the table, and it has created angst amongst a lot of the water users that were concerned, but we finally think we've got somewhere near the proposal that everyone is happy with and people can live with and their farming businesses can live with, and we can also cater for that the need to leave water for the environmental values as well in our proposal. But until our deemed permit is replaced, we can't really move forward on that, because we have to make significant changes to how the water is taken from the Lauder Creek. We need to merge some races together, and that's going to require cost and a little bit of change in how we've done things previously, but for the better. And so, yeah, until we get that deemed permit issued, yeah, we can't do it. We don't have the structure to do it at the moment.
And yeah. Are you anticipating that storage might form part of a sharing arrangement?
Yeah, and in the future, we definitely storage will become a big part of the whole catchment, and also that will come into the flow sharing as well. So yes. Yep.
As part of the current application that you've got, or is
no, not as part of
looking forward in the future.
Looking forward in the future. It's not part of a current application. It has been looked at previously, and we've had plans drawn up at various dam sites and some geotechnical reports, but we need to work out what water we're actually going to have, and then we need to actually make a plan on what we're going to do about storage. So.
And you're not talking long. You're not talking on farm storage here. You're talking what storage in the top of the catchment somewhere, or
it will be in on farm. Well, there's multiple options. Mm. There's options for on farm, but there's also options for community storage as well, which will have significant impact for our catchment, but obviously also significant cost as well. So, but. Mm.
You talked about the efforts that you've gone to get everybody to agree on a sharing regime that everyone can live with. Do you have any concerns about how long that group might hold together for if the current applications don't proceed?
I think there has been so much effort and so much time and resources spent on this currently, we feel we're almost there, but this is a last hurdle, and potentially anything could happen. Like, 6-year permits are going to make it really hard for people to commit to flow sharing, because they're going to be like, well, I don't know actually how my business is. I've already invested all this money in trying to get our deemed permit lodged, and which we have done, which the Lauder Group has invested about 90-odd thousand already. We need to actually... People are probably just going to put up the barriers and just say, well, if we're going for 6-year permits, we feel like we've given everything to this deemed permit replacement, and if it's going to be 6 years, we're probably just going to put up the barriers and just continue doing what we're doing and not engage in flow sharing at all. Just carry on with the status quo, potentially. Yeah.
Nothing further, mate.
Thank you. Questions?
Mm-hmm. Yes, Your Honour. Good morning.
Good morning.
I've just got just a couple of questions of clarification about one of the paragraphs in your evidence, if you've got a copy of your evidence in front of you. And I'm looking at paragraph 16.
Yes.
And so the second sentence there where it says, if Plan Change 7 were to be applied to us, we would effectively have lost 16% of our water.
Mm-hmm.
Was that a reference to 16% of the water allocated under your permit, not necessarily the water that you've been historically using?
Yeah.
And that was based on the notified version of the schedule.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I haven't had time to run that figure through again based on the potential changes to the schedule.
Yes, and that is a moving feast at the moment with expert conferencing, so I appreciate that. And just following on into the next sentence, that the reference that the reduction in allocation could strand some of the assets we've only just installed. Was that a reference to the assets that you were planning to install but made the decision not to? Or is
yes.
That is?
Yep. Yep.
So you haven't actually installed them yet?
Not yet, no.
Okay.
And that decision was made when prior to PC7 being notified or afterwards?
It was made prior to PC7 being notified, yes. Yep. It was made in the earliest stages of deemed permit replacement and, you know, being talked about and starting to get that information for that. Everything just went on hold.
And just a follow-up question around the consent applications that you were talking with my friend about earlier. In terms of the consent duration sought in that application, what's the duration that's been sought? Is it the Manahirakea catchment group application?
So that forms part of it. But also under the Mena Herakia, you've got the law, it's our Lauder, Lauder Creek application, which the term being sought there is 35 years on the application, from what I understand. Yeah.
And that application has been lodged?
Yes, and accepted with the council, and is currently on hold.
You will have heard my questions with Ms. Gillespie earlier around the irrigation area, and one of the things I'm keen to understand is the ease at which you're able to identify the maximum area of irrigation between September 2017 and March 2020, so the dates being referred to in the plan. Is that something you're able to highlight fairly easily on a map showing the area that's been irrigated?
Yes, it is. But one of the things, like some of those areas may only get one lot of irrigation for that whole season, depending on what's happening with our water, or some of them may have been irrigated one of those years, but not in the next year. Or, there's a few variables around that. So if irrigation means just water applied to the land, well, then we can easily mark that any water applied to the land, excluding rainfall, well, then yes, that can be easily marked on a map.
And you have records of the where you are irrigating and the areas that the water is applied to the land, so to inform that process?
Yeah.
Those were the questions that I had. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Re-examination. I just want to ask you again about that 16%. Your answer was clear and the question was clear. Maybe that I'm not clear.
Yeah.
Your 16% effectively have lost 16% of the water. Did you answer that question with your deemed permit in mind?
Yes. Yeah, so that was done based on the allocation of, so effectively on paper allocation, the 16% was.
Yeah, so it's 16, that. You're reducing the amount of water which is available under the deemed permit by 16%, or were you reducing by 16%? That which you are ordinarily applying.
It's going to reduce by 16% based on what our highest previous total has been.
So it's a reduction on the schedule, not the reduction on the deemed permit. Mm. Okay, no, that I understand.
Yes, yeah, that's
yeah I think it was, the way it was, I picked it up as being less 16% off the deemed permit, and I thought, no, that's probably not right.
Yeah.
But understood. That's all good.
I just have just a few matters of clarification. So in your evidence you refer to contour irrigation, and I just wanted to understand what that meant. We've had various terms used before us, such as this border dike irrigation and wild flooding or surface flooding. Or, I think, had various terms. So when you refer to contour irrigation, can you just explain to me what's happening on your farm?
Yeah, it's predominantly wild flood. There's some areas of border dike as well, but it's predominantly wild flood. So by wild flood, the water goes down a race system and overflows over the land and is often collected and then put on another paddock or is put, wherever we require it to go on those paddocks. So there's a network of race systems throughout the paddocks to deliver the water.
Hmm. Right, and so we've heard that people do various things to get it these races to overflow in terms of arrangements, whether it's boards or I don't know what other kinds of things you do.
Yeah, and like dams and things like that. It's easy, relatively easy to control. And just manipulate it through canvas dams that are portable dams, or like the shovel digging areas where you just surface digging areas where you want it to go more, or, and you're just changing it every so often, like probably every two or three times a day.
Right, so it's quite intensive in terms of the labour requirements.
And we know that we recognise that it's not the most sustainable use of water, and overseer nutrient budgeting has showed us that as well, and we know that, and we want to obviously move forward to that spray system, but it's the cost that it's taking is just, we need to be sure about everything before we commit to that cost.
Sure, understood. So I wasn't sure I was entirely clear about the priorities in terms of your deemed permits. You said you had 3 and 4. So could you just explain where the 3 comes in and where the 4 comes in?
So, it's probably where it goes off is probably easier to maybe explain it. So you've got the water flowing through the creek, obviously, and then people are abstracting what they're allowed to take. So what happens is then when the water flow drops, number four will stop taking water.
Right, so where is that for
you? For us, it's right... Well, at the bottom, our catchment is, we've got intermittent dry reach due to a large aquifer. So our catchment is kind of a little bit split in two. So the priorities that I'm talking about are the ones that probably concern us. So they're in between us, our two takes, really. Just to be clear on that, there are more takes further down, they don't have seem to fit into this priority system between us, the four takes that are concerned, pretty much with the top of the Lauder Creek, we'd call that. So when the Lauder Creek drops down, number four goes off. And so when the creek drops further, number three will go off. And then when the creek drops further, one of the Omakau irrigation companies will go off. And then when the creek drops further, the Moran Brown one, which is the other farmer, will go off. And then when the creek drops further, the other Omakau area irrigation company one will drop as well.
So you've got 5 deemed permits?
There's actually only 4 deemed permits because
the last one to go off goes off. Why?
Because there's no water.
There's no water in the creek.
So
or limited amount of water, you can't get the water.
You can't suck it out.
Okay. So it's obvious what's happening then. There's nothing that you necessarily need to do because there's no water you can take.
No, that's dead right.
And you asked some questions about storage in terms of sharing arrangements, and you answered that would be in the future and that it wasn't part of the current application. So what were you thinking of in terms of in the future? Were you thinking beyond the 35 years that you were hoping to get a consent for?
It would be within the 35 years. With all the impacts of... storage is going to be really important going forward with the impacts of climate change and how our weather patterns are changing a little bit. And So it would be in within the 35 years air storage would be in place and operating. So there's a multitude of avenues which we could put more people on storage and take even less from the creek, or you know, or put more water into the creek as well. There's heaps of options that the storage will actually give us as well.
And so what were you thinking might advance the water storage consideration and actually making it reality in terms of the various interests?
Well, I think if we know exactly how much water we've got, and we can make a plan in terms of financing it, that will be probably the biggest things that will advance the storage project.
So when you say if you know exactly how much water you have.
Yeah, well, you've been allocated how much
water. What period of time are you thinking about that in terms of?
In terms of actually implementing the storage?
Well, in terms of making a decision to invest in the storage.
Well, I would imagine, like, we've already talked about it now, but I think that, you know, that could be maybe a 10, you know, within 10 years you could be working out that information and coming to a decision within 10 years' time on what we're actually going to do in terms of our storage, yeah.
Thank you.
Right. I'm also interested in storage. You mentioned community storage and you also mentioned on-farm storage. On-farm storage, is there like an average number of days supply for on-farm storage, or is it as big as you want to make it? Can you sort of help me out there?
Well, I suppose it's limited also by finances as well. But the problem, like, we need our water, the most water that we actually need is in January, February, March, the driest times, and that's usually when we've got no water. So really it's filling those potentially 6 to 8 weeks, making storage calculations to be able to fill that gap is...
So it's supply over that January through March period, isn't it? And that doesn't sound like to me to be an on-farm storage facility. That looks like what you're describing sounds more like a community facility. Would that be fair?
Yeah, it would be, yeah.
And, I mean, I haven't got a proper sense of it, but I mean, my sense of it is that on-farm storage around here looks like, on average, two days, maybe a week at most, in terms of what people are building on their properties?
Yeah, there's some areas that have got a month.
A month?
Yeah.
What sort of operator would that be?
Well, you potentially passed it, maybe coming in, you know, on the, above Beck's there. There's a big storage dam there. And
is that the one under construction?
Yeah. Well, I'm not exactly 100% sure how many days they've got there, and it depend on how
deep it was.
Yeah, and how full, how much water they could get into there. But they're a sheep and beef farm, and it's important to their farming business.
Is that in and around that area called Blackstream or Black's Race or something like that?
Blackstone,
yep. That's it. So is that big? Yeah. Yeah, no, we did fly that a couple of times. Yep.
Yeah. It abuts the highway.
So there is significant amount of on-farm storage actually happening as well that will take, you know, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, will cover that period as well. So that has definitely been happening.
The one we saw at Beck seemed to be an outlier in terms of its size, though we had no sense of depth or dimensions generally other than what we could see. Would it be fair that that's an outlier, at least in terms of the spatial area that it takes up?
Probably in terms of the area, potentially, yes. But in terms of volume, well, I don't know how much volume that does that does hold, but there's some on-farm storage dams that are relatively deep as well, and even though they're smaller, their volume is still significant. Yeah.
Right. And so, so potential storage on farm for weeks, not necessarily 3 months, which is your driest period, but for more than 1 week anyway.
Yeah. Okay.
And then the community storage, presumably that's targeting sufficient capacity to irrigate over that dry period, January through March.
Yeah.
Okay. Alrighty. Deemed permits, very interested in that, trying to get a sense of what that's all about. I mean, and you would have seen the questions that were said to planners, had to start at others, had to start providing us information because it could potentially be a significant issue. But we need some facts and we need some law. And we've obviously asking or have appointed our RNQC to assist us on this as well. So in terms of the facts, though, Lauder Creek, does it have both deemed permits and regular water taken use under the Resource Management Act? Does it have sort of both, or are they only deemed permits out on that creek?
No, there is some... there's both, because the regular resource management permits are newer ones, but all the existing deemed permits are older ones.
Yeah.
So those newer ones would have been replaced probably from previous deemed permits.
Okay.
And
do you know, and you may not, so not to worry, whether those newer, regular Resource Management Act permits are subject to minimum flows, residual flows?
No. No, I don't think so. No, they're not.
Okay.
No.
So how does it kind of work then if you've got a creek that has both deemed permits and regular permits? How does that work as between neighbours and... who's taken what? I understand how it works in terms of the order of priority, but how does it work with other people?
So what we envisage happening on Lauder Creek, so we'll be a water management group, and the flow will be, there will be a residual down at the bottom of our creek and a residual which is pretty much at Glassford Road. So those, we've got a split in the middle. So all of those permits will have to be part of the water management group that Lauder Creek has formed, and they will all have to adhere to that, to either the top or bottom residual.
How does it work now, though?
Now what happens is there's a... flow recorder at the bottom, and people obviously are aware of that, but normally it's just communicated and completely voluntary. Like, we communicate amongst each other saying, look, we've shut off, you guys are going to need to shut off too, because the creek's starting to get low. So people, farmers or irrigators are actually looking what's happening with the creek, and we can see that data on the at the rail trail site. And yes, I know it's not meant to be a head to now, but it's still an indicator that kind of people have in their minds a little bit, and so everyone just reduces the amount of water that they take.
All right. And it may be that those people with resource management consents are below the four deemed permits, or are they scattered in amongst the ones with deemed permits?
Well, I think one of them is below and... there's issues with getting water there to the take anyway.
But the others, could they be scattered in amongst the four deemed permits in terms of their takes, or above the deemed permits?
No. They'd have to put in an infrastructure to be able to take that. They couldn't. They couldn't. Okay. We want to merge our takes. to make it simple, to make it simpler and easier to control and easier to manage.
I can see the sense, the sensibility in that, absolutely. So you don't need to convince me about, you know, a better way of doing things. I guess I'm from my perspective, trying to establish some facts and looking at risk management, because there are two narratives that, and, you know, the court's got to decide. One's a six-year consent narrative, or possibly longer, but six-year consent, and the other one is, you know, I think Ms. Dicey has it at 20 years at the moment, 20-year consent. Yeah. Others might want 35-year consent. So there's two big decisions, and I need to know what are my risks on the deemed permits. So, and so that's trying to draw out a view. Do we have people up catchment or upstream who have regular resource consents who could suck it dry before you even get, you know, get to a deemed permit? Or is that not what's actually happening on the Lauder? You know, the regular resource consents are below the you know, the four deemed permits.
Regular resource consents are below the deemed permits. Yep. There are other deemed permits further down below that creek, but I think they're all the resource consents are below all of the existing deemed permits. But when all of those come into play to be resource management permits, well, then everyone will be adhering to those residuals anyway. And because there's the water, there's only enough water, the primary allocation is all taken up, effectively. Mm. So there is no more primary allocation available in that, on that creek.
And so you hold the deemed permits with the third and fourth level of priority? And do you, your decision to go off, does it require a phone call from the person with the superior priority, number one? Or is it just your own routine monitoring? You know when to turn off, you turn off. You don't need your neighbour to phone you and say turn off.
We do talk to those other priorities as well. Yeah, we definitely communicate.
Yeah.
And, you know, priority number two will know that there's not much water getting there, so they'll be like, okay, well, is everyone else... Is three and four, have they turned off? Yeah, and yeah, so it is an open dialogue definitely between the parties, and we all try and work together. We're all the same, you know, and it's just we just need to turn off when we need to turn off. And
is that working together in terms of also what you're doing on the land as well, and what might need finishing off or another rotation before you turn off? Is it that sort of level or? Well, when you've hit the turn off, you really have to turn off.
Yeah. Okay. When you turn off, you have to turn off. Yeah.
Okay.
It's only stock water is all that.
Yeah.
And that's like very, very minimal. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. No, you have to turn off.
Okay. And well, those are my questions. You've got questions, Commissioner?
And if you've got your flow sharing under the new application, how would that work? Would it work in a similar way in terms of communicating with each other?
It will work in a similar way. There will obviously be a bit more measuring in place as well. Obviously the ultimate is to have that as real time, but there's also a cost to that as well. So it will work together through communication, really. Yeah.
So it requires a good deal of commitment and from all those involved, sort of thing. Yes.
Yeah, it does. It does require a great deal of commitment, but it's also, it's very two-way at the end of the day, because you've also got, you know, when it comes back up as well. Mm-hmm. So you're talking about that side of it as well. So yeah, it's both ways.
Okay, and just one thing in terms of your own property, you said you've got 411 hectares currently irrigated. Do you have a plan to extend that or to change the way in which it's currently irrigated? Well, firstly, do you plan to extend it?
Yeah, and not so much extend it, but change the way that it potentially is irrigated. Yep, moving from that contour mainly to spray, I suppose.
And how long have you been on your property?
Well, my husband's family has been on there since 1978, I think, yeah.
And when you took over with the 411 in place, yes, you haven't come from a lower figure to a higher figure.
No, it's always been around that, yeah.
So your proposal really is to make that more efficient rather than extend it. Okay, thank you, Your Honour.
Thank you. Questions? No questions? All right, well, thank you very much for your evidence.
Thank you.
So we're adjourned 3 to 5 past. Oh, no, you're adjourned for 15 minutes anyway. Everybody will probably feel like a break. All right, thank you.
All rise.